Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Najoe. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Today we're talking about flowering trees, shrubs, and perennials. Our guest is Liz Freemoth. She provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe. She has some plant varieties to tell us about, and we'll also take your calls. So join in with your comments and questions by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Liz, it's so good to have you back with us.
Oh, so good to be here and actually be here in person.
In person. Yay. It's wonderful. And we're both kind of allergy prone today, so excuse our froggy throats.
That's right.
So, you know, with flowering plants and shrubs and perennials, we seem to see the same plants over and over again. Why don't we have more varieties in the places where we shop?
A lot of what is offered is based on a few things. Number one, what people are asking for. And if the places don't get input, then they're going to go by what is available from the growers that they're getting their starts from. And that can be something as simple as somebody was a great salesman at the wholesale level
sure.
or at the breeding level.
Right.
And also we're looking at what's new, you know, what's new for different markets. And gardeners love to try new plants, new cultivars, new everything. We just love that. And so if there's something really great out there, the breeders are going to really push it, and then the growers are going to grow them out, and then we get them in the garden center. Well, if you've got a really great salesman, they're going to be all over the place. So you may see some of the same from place to place. There are always going to be those lovely, lovely small garden centers that grow what they love. And mm-hmm. then you also have, and you know, any independent garden center really is a fantastic place to go because you're going to find hidden gems everywhere. And that's not to knock the big bucks, because they do a great job also of providing plants. But some of those small ones, people really do it because they absolutely love, love, love what they're doing. And so you get some kind of unusual things. And there are even, you know, when I've been out driving around Madison, you'll find this out-of-the-way little garden center that's maybe one hoop house, and it's in their yard. And their plants that they've been breeding themselves and just selling them out of their yard. So don't discount popping in when somebody has a plant sign on their yard.
Mm-hmm.
Go in and see what they have. So how do you get more into the marketplace? As a consumer, do your research online, go to shows, go to botanic gardens, and see what's in their trial area. So any place that you can find a trial garden, take a look. Those things are not going to be on the market just yet, or very, you know, really early entrants. And so what you're going to want to do is pick those that you like and then talk to your local garden center and say, hey, can you grow these for me next year? Can you get them? And if it's doable, they love to do that. They love to respond.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to ask them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like the grocery store. When you need something, ask them and they'll probably get it for you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And with growing plants, we know there's a long lead time on that. So if you ask for it, can I have it this year? The answer may be no, but it might also be yes, because oftentimes they'll go looking for those from other growers or from other garden centers, especially if you're a repeat client. They're,
mm-hmm.
they're going to keep you happy. They want you to be happy. It's gardening.
Right,
you
right.
know, it's a happy
it's
thing.
A very happy thing.
Yeah, so it's really, a lot of it is consumer driven. Mm-hmm. So go out there, find what you like, and then ask for it. Don't be afraid to ask for it.
We had so many people that were introduced to gardening. They've tried it out during this whole last 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a huge shortage of plants. Mm-hmm. Is that still the case this year?
Yeah, I'm seeing some shortage, but not as much as last year. And given what happened in 2008 to a lot of landscape plant growers, when the housing market crashed, mm-hmm. a lot of the companies just couldn't make it. And what that did is that caused a bit of a rethink in the growers that was, you know, maybe we shouldn't have quite so much on just sitting there waiting for somebody. Let's do our growing according to what we did last year or what we did the year before, if it was a better indicator of normal. And so I think with COVID coming in, everybody getting, hey, you know, I'm home, let's try some things, that just skewed demand, what wasn't there before. This last year, growers have been able to keep up a little more, but cautiously, because what we don't want to do is put them out of business again. And so they're very cautiously keeping up with the market as best they can. One thing that has surprised me is the amount of large trees that are being sold. And, you know, we're talking like 20-foot trees that are being sold. And with the amount of add-ons and rejuvenation of homes and landscapes, a lot of customers are not willing to wait 40 years for the tree. So there's a handful of really great people that can move big trees successfully. And they have been doing phenomenal business, absolutely phenomenal business. And the thing about that, though, is there's a limited supply because there's only X amount of large trees, and it takes that 30, 40 years to get them to that point. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really very finite as to what's available. The smaller plant materials, you can get them out and going in a shorter time period.
They do grow fairly fast.
They do, and it depends on the plant type. Mm-hmm. Some will, even some perennials will go from seed to almost flower within one season. Mm-hmm. So you do have that potential for, you know, getting more in fairly quickly. Others are a little slow to go.
Yeah.
And so it really just depends on what you're asking
for. So do your research.
Right.
Now, what do you think about ordering online? Have you done any of that?
I typically don't order online because I have no good reason for it other than I like to go touch plants. So instead of ordering online, when I'm out visiting clients in whatever part of the country I'm in, I go to garden centers, I touch, I feel, I do all of that kind of stuff. But there are fantastic online places. You can get some really unusual plant material. Jung's actually does a good job online with their plant material. You know, when you talk about a local garden center, I have gotten plants from them that are absolutely fantastic. What you do have to remember when you're ordering online is oftentimes you're not going to get a huge plant just because of the shipping. So that might be a little bit smaller. And if you're patient, it will do just beautifully. And I have found anything that I have gotten, they've stood behind their material. Places that you can get really unusual things from, Plant Delights Nursery out of North Carolina. They do a great job. They've got really weird and unusual stuff. But they're expensive, of course, and shipping is going to be expensive.
Yes.
I mean, as we all know, plants did not get cheaper over the last 2 years. So just expect you're going to spend a little bit more. But you can get some really unusual things. Just make sure when you're doing online purchasing that you're checking the zone really, really carefully. And it's not always just about what zone is it appropriate for, but also where did that plant come from? So you're looking for plant provenance, so that is this a seed or a plant that was developed in a very warm climate that's dissimilar to ours? If it was, and if it is, then the potential for it to succeed beautifully in the colder, damper, you know, northern climates, it may be a little iffy. But if the gardeners are a lot like me, I'm okay with that. And if I kill a few, at least I know what it's going to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we can establish like little microclimates at our own garden, right?
Yeah. Definitely you can. And you'll notice that as you're walking around the garden, you may have a spot next to the house that doesn't get wind. So you can put something in that might be a little diva-ish, but it will survive. And I think one of the balances we do as gardeners is how many diva plants do we want in the yard? Because each one of those is screaming for attention. Mm-hmm. So how many do you have time to take care of? And so if you've got those little tiny microclimates, or maybe you've got a damp spot in the yard where you can put some plants in that tolerate a little bit more moisture. So, you know, we all have those. You just have to wander around. My favorite mode is to grab beverage of choice, whatever time of the day that is, you know, tea, cocktail, whatever. Wander about the yard at different times of the day and then also during different weather types. So right after a rain, go and take a look at which spots are holding water or which spots seem to drain really, really well. And then choose plants that are appropriate for mm-hmm. them.
That makes total sense. And mm-hmm. you get so much joy. And you notice so many small things when you walk around mm-hmm. a lot in your yard. So
you do. Mm-hmm. And you get to try beverages. Yeah. And that's always good. You know, a nice English breakfast in the morning, it's great.
Absolutely.
Just grab a cuppa and out you go.
That's right. And if you've got some herbs, you can just kind of, you know, add those to mm-hmm. it, you know. Mm-hmm. Always fun. So today we're going to be talking about flowering plants and shrubs. And we all love foliage, but they're kind of the star, aren't they, the flowering plants?
They really are. And, you know, I have my favorites that I talk about every time I talk about flowering trees and shrubs. So I thought I'd do something a little bit different and take a look at the flowers that happen on some of the hardwood trees. So,
okay.
You know, we do have issues with hickory and walnut and where you grow them. But hickory actually has a beautiful blossom on it while the leaves are opening up. It looks like a flower.
Ah.
And it somewhat reminds me of a spider lily, the way it opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, take a look at these different things at different times. Now, I have a maple tree in the yard that is Velazquez, and it was actually named after one of the fantastic plant propagators ever. Unfortunately, passed away from COVID.
Oh.
But this tree was named after him. Well, this year is the first year it blossomed. It had these beautiful yellow blossoms on them that smelled like a mix. And we're talking tiny.
Uh-huh.
We're talking like, you know, not even the size of a dime blossoms,
oh, okay.
clusters of these.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful yellow. And you stuck your face into it, and it was the scent of beeswax and honey together.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's just, you know, you see like this halo of yellow on it, and then you get close and there's this gorgeous scent that goes along with it. And so that, you know, the maple tree, again, Velazquez, if you can find it, it's Acer Velazquez, and
mm-hmm.
A little bit unusual. And you look at hop hornbeam also. That is a great tree. And we have a couple that we all call for a common name, ironwood and hop hornbeam. And they're actually two different plants. They're in the same relatively large family, but both of those have beautiful flowers. And the reason why it's called hop hornbeam is that the flowers look like hops. So the leaves will open, and then you'll see these little strings of flowers on
mm-hmm.
them that are really quite nice. Mine doesn't have any scent on it. And musselwood will do something a little bit similar, but that's a great flowering tree. Heptacodium, one of mine that I talk about all the time. It's actually a tree that comes from China, from the Gorges, the Three Gorges region. And they have traced that back billions of years that it has been around. And hopefully they didn't all get lost when the originals, when they flooded the gorge.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but it's a great tree. I've not found it to be invasive at all. I have it all over the yard. I've planted it for clients. It's a late summer flowering tree. And the common name is Seven Suns because everything is in sevens on that tree. And so it's fantastic. And that's another honey-scented one, which
okay.
is wonderful.
Yeah, that's been on my radar for a while, probably
mm-hmm.
because you mentioned it.
I love that
yeah,
tree. It can be a little more maintenance than some of the others because it seems to have a lot of dead branches in the spring. But they're easy to spot. They're easy to take out.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the bark on this tree. As it ages, it gets vertical striations of color that will go blue and green kind of a pinky color. And so really quite lovely and exfoliating bark and the whole thing. So that's nice.
How big does that tree get?
If you look at the literature, they'll tell you maybe about 20 feet, but
mm-hmm.
I've got one that's getting close to 25 now.
Oh.
But it's a loose tree. It's not a very tight tree, and so the shade underneath it is relatively loose.
Okay. Well, we're talking about flowering plants with Liz Fremont. She's a provider of concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Join in the conversation. We've got open lines, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our on-air producer today is Clara Neipert, and Lee Rayburn is our technical director. And this is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us every Friday or listen again on Saturday mornings at 6. You can also go online and listen at any time. Coming up next week, we will be doing the show live from Bayfield in Bloom. We're back up there after a 3-year hiatus, I believe it is. Well, right now, we're talking about flowering plants. So, Liz, we were in the middle of talking about trees. So let's continue.
Yeah. One that we discount a little bit because they're not particularly hardy for us up here in the north, peach trees.
Oh, yes.
Peach and apricot.
Mm-hmm.
Look at them a little bit differently. Instead of for fruit production, look at them for the beautiful flowers that they give in the spring. What typically happens is they will flower beautifully and then we'll get a frost. But if you can keep them healthy, even just to flower, uh-huh. and you don't care so much about the fruit, it's absolutely a beautiful, beautiful tree to have in the yard.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful pink blossoms on it and just full. And the bark on an apricot tree is beautiful. Very, very, very beautiful. So, you know, think outside the box a little bit when you're looking at just plain color.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, just in the southern part of the state, sorry, northern people, it's not going to work. There actually are crepe myrtles that will grow down south here. Mm. And we're not talking about a tree. We're talking about a tiny little shrub.
Okay.
But there is something satisfying about getting a crepe myrtle to grow this far north. And I believe the one that I have had the best luck with is called Tonto. And it will die back to the ground and then it will come up and you will get the crepe myrtle blossom. So anybody who's been down south and you see those gorgeous trees of purple and red and whatever.
Yeah,
we're not going to get that here. But but it is something unusual mm-hmm. to give a try. And, one evergreen that I want people to look at a little bit differently is the larch.
And oh, yes.
If you get up close to a larch, the flower is actually before the cone starts to develop. So you'll see those green pods, the pre-cones that mm-hmm. are coming. You look really close. There's a pinky magenta flower. That's the flower.
Okay.
And so some of these things we may not see unless we get really, really close up to them. But take a look at some unusual things mm-hmm. and see if you can put that into your yard, especially trees. You know, we're
right.
talking about things that are a little bit taller.
Yeah.
Hazelnut trees also are beautiful. Same thing with the shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
They have gorgeous blossoms on them. And when the fruit starts to develop, they're actually quite interesting. To me, that's even better than the flower.
Okay.
So that gives you some real good interest.
Great, yeah. Great. Well, we do have a phone call from Mary Kay in Kenosha. Hi, Mary Kay. What do you want to tell us today?
Hi. I took 2 horticulture classes, one in 1988 and one in 2010. And what I've noticed is the marketers are now in the colleges. We need to talk about more United States heirloom and native plants in our climate zones. Okay, we have many trees in the United States. We're taking in plants from other countries that aren't fragrant. They're not useful. And that's what I'd like to talk about.
Okay, thanks, Mary Kay. Comments?
Definitely, I am one that encompasses all plants. I will choose a native if I can, if one is available. I do have to fulfill the requirements of my clients. And so sometimes that can't be done with natives. But we have a lot of beautiful natives, the musselwood, the ironwood that we had talked about, beech trees, which are absolutely fantastic. And with some of these, they have specific requirements as to how you can grow them and how you cannot grow them. And unfortunately, in subdivision settings, they will not support some of our native trees because of how we've changed the soils. So you have to kind of expand how you're looking at the plant offerings. But I agree with her. We should be using more of our natives. We've got great native nurseries in this state who are looking at how you can improve on what nature has provided us. So often you'll hear the term nativar, which means that someone has selected or developed a new plant type off of a native. And, you know, we're just talking about an improvement or mm-hmm. a change. And so don't let that fool you that we've gone elsewhere. But also, we need to keep plants of all kinds. And as long as they're not invasive, I say let's give them a little bit of a chance and see how they are, but definitely use the natives. We've got absolutely wonderful, wonderful natives here.
Yeah, we certainly do. Well, thank you for bringing that up, Mary Kay. We also have a question from Bruce in Madison. Hi, Bruce. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question on cold hardiness for fig trees. I see that there's a Chicago fig tree made for around zone 5,
mm-hmm.
but with these harsh winters we've been having for like the last 10 years, you know, we have temperatures for a solid week where the temperature doesn't even hit zero, not even including the wind chill factor.
Mm-hmm.
So can you grow them outdoors, or do you have to pot them and bring them in? And what's your recommendation? So that's my question.
If they are really, truly 4 and 5 hardy, then you can do a couple of things. You can do like we do with roses or anything else, the grafted roses that may not survive our very, very cold winters, and that's that you can cover them up. So you wait until the ground freezes solid before you do that. And I mention this frequently when I'm on. We do that because if you cover anything, any kind of a plant, before the rodents have found their winter homes, doing that will provide bed and breakfast for the entire winter for them. So you want to wait until the ground freezes solid and then cover them up with a good hefty layer of mulch. You're going to cut them back. You know, I'll say that right away. You're going to cut them back. And then cover them and then uncover them when we've got the danger of really, really severe temperatures past. And you want to uncover them slowly so that you're not shocking them if it's still cold outside. But definitely, yeah, you can do it. There are some that I've had luck with for a year. Brown turkey can be somewhat hardy. Chicago is somewhat hardy. But we are talking about a plant that actually does better in like Mediterranean climates. And even down in Georgia, where I was taking care of a pretty good-sized fig tree, it was still marginal on its fruit production. The climate is just a little bit off for us. What they do in Italy for their fig trees, this is kind of a thing. You dig them up and you lay them on their side and you bury them outside. And then it's a whole fig thing, and it's a man fig thing, and it's absolutely lovely. I love it. And they love their fig trees, and that's what they do. You know, and then pop them up when it's mm-hmm. time for them to get going.
Yeah, I've heard about that in mm-hmm. some other of the kind of, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So something to think about, Bruce, you
right.
know, make it a hobby, right?
Absolutely. And I would give it a try. I mean, we have people who have done banana plants where you dig a trench, mm-hmm. you dig a deep trench so that entire plant is buried upright in that pit. And then you cover that with leaves or mulch, and then you're excavating that in the spring. You know, if there is a will, there is a way to kind of sort of reach for it. Figs are not that quite long of a reach. You should be able to get at least a good couple of years out of
yeah.
them. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for the question, Bruce. Let's go on to Julie in Fitchburg. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
I just moved to a large lot that has been ignored, uncared for a number of years. I have a plethora of black walnut trees, and the undergrowth is buckthorn. Mm. I know I need to rip out the buckthorn. What could I plant under some of these black walnut? Because I know that's a problem.
Right. I do have a list of plants that, and we can post that. I don't have it with me.
Sure, you can send it to me.
Yeah, I'll get that to Jill, and they can put it where it needs to be, and you can access that. I've got a list of plants that do well in general. Each site is going to be different because each tree is going to have a little bit more or less juglone. They're like humans. Unless they're identical clones, there's going to be some differences. But you do want to be aware of what potentially will grow and won't grow. And there are plenty of lists out there. It's just, which one do you trust? Which one don't you? And I've edited out things that I know have not been successful. So these are plants that have been proven over time by universities to be somewhat tolerant or really tolerant to juglone. And that doesn't go away when the tree goes away. Get rid of the buckthorn, by the way. First off, get rid of the buckthorn. But as far as the jug loan goes and the walnut trees, just try and work around them. You know, really, that's about the best you can do.
Yeah, I lived with walnut trees for 20-some years, and it is trial and error. Mm-hmm. A lot of things on the list that said, no, that's not going to work. And I put them in there not knowing that that wasn't going to work, and they did fine. But
right.
Yeah, so you really do have to experiment.
You do, and I have a butternut in the yard that produces in the same family, produces jug loan, not typically as large of an amount. And I could watch this shrub rose, this kind of suckering shrub rose that I had, move further out as it would kind of travel out. And it's to the point where it's kind of killing itself out, where the roots are so far that the rose can't keep up with moving.
Uh-huh.
And so you can see that that plant didn't like it.
Yeah.
It was not.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other roses that will do beautifully with them. And the same thing with peonies. Some will say peonies can't grow under them. Some types, yes, you can. They do just fine.
Yeah, for sure. Well, good luck, Julie. That just getting rid of the buckthorn is going to be, find some goats. That works pretty well, I heard.
And, you know, pull and get rid of it as much as you can without the chemicals. They actually do respond very well. The buckthorn responds very well to pulling on the young ones.
Mm.
It is a labor of love. You'll be happy when it's kind of eradicated.
Okay, thanks, Julie. And let's go to John in Green Bay, who also has a tree question.
Yeah, good morning. I would like to know if Liz is familiar with a arborvitae called Green Giant.
Yep.
I've got two of them I planted, and it seems like the deer don't like to eat into them like the other types of arborvitae.
That one, yes, that actually is what people are telling me. It is more Western. That's a Western arb. And what we have here in general are more of the eastern arborvitas. And they love the eastern arborvitas. Those you'll see as little lollipop trees, high up as they can reach. They chew them off. What I have seen this year, I want to give you a heads up. So keep an eye on your green giants if you have them in. Deer over the last couple of years have been eating things that I have not seen them eat in 20 years. And I was thinking about this, you know, over the last couple of years, I was kind of cussing the deer out in my yard because they were eating things that they don't normally eat. And so I was thinking, you know, why would they be doing that? They ate hellebore leaves. They don't eat hellebore leaves. They were eating my Western arb. They don't eat Western arb. It's got too much oil in it is why they don't like that one. And then I saw a study from Pennsylvania that they were testing the deer for COVID, and they had, you know, I think it was Pennsylvania and Ohio they were doing that in, and 80% of the deer that they were testing were coming up with COVID. And so then that made me think, well, hey, wait a minute. Do they get the same kind of symptoms that humans do? Are their taste buds altered? You know, is this why they've been eating things that they normally wouldn't eat? Because they are repelled by very strong oils in the plants, and that's why they don't eat Western arb. It's not palatable to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with a lot of the other plants, the hellebores, that has got something in it that they just don't like. So why are they eating these things that they don't like? And so that was the only thing I could come up with. I mean, they are repelled by scent as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were eating scented plants, which was, why would you be doing that? And you can't actually ask a deer if it's lost its taste.
No,
so the only thing I can do is suppose.
Yes.
And we'll see if they actually stop eating on some of those things. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is with deer, once they start a feeding pattern, it becomes a habit very, very quickly, and they'll go to the same route and eat the same plants. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually stop hitting the ones that they normally would not eat. But yes, Green Giant has actually shown to be pretty good.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that call, John. Let's go to Judy in Lac du Flambeau. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
What can we help you with?
Judy.
Yeah.
Hi, I live in Lac du Flambeau, and I live on my yard is quite large, and throughout the years I've tried to landscape it, and I'm having no luck with flowers. I want perennials because it's easier for me to plant. I live on the yard is sloped. It's very sandy soil with lots of stones and gravel and a lot of tree roots. And a lot of shade, lots and lots of shade. And I'm really kind of tired of hostas, so I was wondering if there's anything else I could. Every corner. Yeah.
I can imagine you are kind of tired of hostas. Do you have a lot of deer up there?
Well, I don't here. I've had absolutely no problem at all with anything eating anything.
Oh, well, then you're actually,
I don't know why.
Well, you're actually lucky. We'll do a knock wood and say we'll hope that continues. That really does help out with the plant list. So some of the things that do really pretty good once they're established. Now, anytime you have sand and gravel in a planting area, you look for plants that will tolerate drought, because it is going to be very, very well drained. And so you want to make sure that even though the plants you are choosing say that they tolerate drought, you need to remember to make sure that they're watered until they're established, because they'll only withstand that kind of dryness once the roots are established. They do need the water on the roots. So they take a little bit more care. That site takes a little bit more care to get things going. But you can look at Brunera, that's B-R-U-N-N, Brunera, actually, N-N-E-R-A. And there are some lovely, lovely cultivars out there. You can go with a standard green that has beautiful spring flowers that look like blue forget-me-nots. And it's often called perennial forget-me-not. It's not, but it looks like a beautiful, nice little halo of blue flowers that poke up above the leaves. There's a variegated one, and it's just called variegata. That one has got lovely creamy edges on it. And then you can go into the various other series that have silver leaves. There's Jack Frost, there's Sea Heart, there is Silver, Silver Sea, I think. There's tons of them out there. As long as the shade is good, and especially in the afternoon, they will do very, very well for you once they're established. And they will die back to the ground every winter, so you really have no cutback on those. It's super easy, super, super easy. Hellebores will do really pretty okay for you in that soil. You are going to have to make sure that they have moisture to get going. They typically will like a little bit more nutrients and organic matter in the soil, but you can actually get them to go in the shade and choose one of the more sandy, soily areas rather than the gravel. You also can do some of the dry ferns. The wood ferns will do well. Lady fern, you can also try, I'm not sure off the top of my head whether the Japanese forest grass is hardy that far north, but they will tolerate dryness as long as you have some moisture around the root. So when you're digging the holes and do a few test holes, check to see if there is some moisture, maybe about 4 to 6 inches deep. Because even if you have sand and gravel, if you go down that far, you may actually find that there's some residual water moving around those sand particles and around the gravel. So if that's the case, the Japanese forest grass will do fine, and that's a shade grass. So if you want something that's kind of grassy, that'll work for you. Let's see, what else? What else can we? Begonias and actually cranesbill. Cranesbill geranium will do absolutely beautifully there for you. And I would say almost any of them will do wonderfully. Again, you're going to have to give them some moisture to get them started, but they should do okay. And I think that'll at least get you enough to get started.
Yeah, definitely. Would it make sense for her to talk to some greenhouses that
absolutely
specialize in natives too?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these are natives.
Yeah.
The hellebore is not so much, but, yeah. But we do have some beautiful natives that mm-hmm. you can go with trilliums. You can go with ginger. We have got some absolutely wonderful things. Don't pick the wild ginger. Go and get some cultivated from a garden center. But go to a good local garden center for you, because they are going to know absolutely what grows.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good luck, Judy. This is this is Garden Talk. Our guest today is Liz Fremont. She's provider of concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Co. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And
This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Join us on Monday when we talk about the remarkable life of Jean Moran. He is a World War II veteran from Soldier's Grove who credits his upbringing on a Wisconsin dairy farm with helping him survive the atrocities of war. And then at 11:45, we'll talk to the authors of a book about the USS Indianapolis, the World War II ship that delivered the first atomic bomb. That's Monday on the Ideas Network. And right now it's Garden Talk, so we're talking about flowering plants today. And we talked about some trees, so now let's talk about some shrubs, Liz.
I love shrubs. Yeah. Absolutely love shrubs. And we have, we'll go with our natives to start with.
Okay.
We have some absolutely lovely natives to play with. And if you haven't visited the Arboretum here, it is a great way to get introduced to what's flowering, what's not, you know, make it a regular walkthrough. And if you can't make the walk for, you know, through the Arboretum, then make sure that you're visiting your local garden centers at least once every couple of weeks, 3 weeks, because you're going to see everything in bloom as it's going. And so you'll get a really good idea of what you'd want to put in your yard. And you can do that for an entire season and pick out a planting list for yourself that will encompass color and fragrance throughout the entire year.
Yeah.
And so it just takes, as we had talked about before, it takes a little bit of homework. But one of my favorites has to be the serviceberry, the amelanchier. I absolutely love that shrub. And there are different forms, different cultivars out there that will give you different things. You know, if you're looking for form, there's some that are much nicer for uplighting. And then we have those that are good for berry development. Because if you have never eaten a serviceberry berry, you're sadly missing out. And, you know, I have people say to me, well, I have them in the yard, but I have never seen berries. Well, if you blink, the birds will get to them way before you will. And they, to me, taste kind of like, they taste blueberry-ish with a seed in them. So if you wait until they're that really nice, ripe, kind of dark blue, purple color, they have an excellent flavor. But the birds will definitely be there. So you have to have no birds in your yard in order to have some berries.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. But that is one that looks good in the yard. It's got beautiful bark. It's got great flowers. It's open about the little bit before the crab apples are. And so you'll get a nice transition into crab apples. And aronia is another one that's an excellent shrub that has great flowers on it. And then it has berries that are edible once they're cooked. If you eat them off the shrub, you aren't going to be very happy with that. They're a little, the tannins in them are unbelievable. So you need to cook them in order to use them. And the same with an elderberry. You know, we have beautiful elderberries. If you've got a damp spot in your yard, maybe next to a pond, or if you live along a stream or something like that, elderberries love water. And they will do fine in dry areas, but they love water, and so they will do fantastic. And that's a beautiful flowering shrub, and you get those fantastic berries once that's done also. But the flowers are edible, the berries are edible, all of that. One that is not edible, and this is not a native, but I still love it, and I'm still going to have it in my yard. It's not invasive, is an abelia that comes from Eastern Europe. And it is a beautifully scented plant. It you will smell it all across your yard. And the blossoms are just starting to open now. And it looks like the abelias that are more southern worthy, only taller, more beautiful. And it's a very easy care for shrub. So it will blossom now. You can cut it all the way back and it will develop new flowers on the new wood this year. It will flower again in the spring. So, you know, it's a great shrub to have. Little difficult to find. They're starting now to do some development on cultivars, but otherwise it was straight species on
it.
So that's just a handful of different and unusual ones. I love Aesculus, the shrubby kind of chestnut. And that one will get to be maybe about 15, 20 feet high as a shrub, but that's got summer panicles of white flowers, creamy white flowers on them, and beautiful, the five leaf leaves on it, so it looks like the palm, and it's just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, so many unusual ones. It's always lovely to hear you describing those because we don't see them very often, so that's great.
No, and you really do have to make frequent trips at different times of the year. You know, if you can't do it all in 1 year, Really just to do it over a number of years so you can see what else is going on.
Yeah.
And another really good, it's, you know, kind of a cross. It's not really a shrub. It's perennial, but the false indigo or the baptisia, which the cultivars that are being developed on that native are absolutely beautiful. You can get everything from a yellow to a deep purple to a white to a, you know, a cherry. They've got one that's called Cherry's Jubilee that's got a red to it, and it's just absolutely fantastic.
Beautiful. Well, if you have a question about flowering shrubs or any other kind of plant, give us a call, 800-642-1234, and let's go to the phones. We've got Lynn in Beloit that has a question. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good morning. Okay, so all these shrubs you just listed, I have an old yard, and I have four Colorado blue spruce that are at the stage of dying from the bottom, and I hate to take any tree down, so I've been cutting them up little by little. Can I plant anything under those, like a shrub, especially some I need for privacy?
Privacy shrubs are going to be interesting underneath a heavy shade conifer like that. I don't worry about pH at all because that's kind of a, you know, it's a non-issue for us. I know people say, well, the pH is higher underneath evergreens. You know, it's marginal. And we've got such high pH soil, it doesn't make any difference. So sometimes that just brings it closer to neutral. So we're fine that way. It's the shade issue and the competition for nutrients and water that you're going to run into problems with, especially to develop privacy plantings. Now, are you talking year-round privacy plantings or growing, you know, outdoor season only?
Just summer.
And then you can really go with something deciduous. And you could look at dogwoods that will tolerate some shade. There are also some viburnums that will tolerate shade that have got some pretty intense branching structures. Even forsythia, you know, if you can keep them to the outer edges so that they get some sun, you'll get better flowers. But a lot of the taller cultivars of forsythia will develop really, really dense branching structures. And so you will get coverage. It just won't be leaf coverage during the winter. But, you know, that is enough to visually block people from looking through oftentimes. Boxwood will actually grow in shade very, very well. They are expensive. We do have to watch out for boxwood blight. But if you get boxwood from a reputable grower, you should not have an issue with that. And potentially you can treat for that. Jury's out on whether that's, you know, whether we can do that successfully enough in the home garden to actually get control. But those are at least some that will get you going. Do you have deer problems?
No. I have a fenced yard. And actually it is, they would get pretty good sun.
Oh, okay.
Actually.
Okay. Yeah. So even under the spruce, so are you planting next to them or not under them?
Well, they would be under, but they'd be on the outside like you discussed,
okay.
And they would get pretty much morning and afternoon sun.
Oh, well, that actually makes that much easier. So you could, if you don't have deer issues, you can actually look at arborvitae, which do grow in the shade, and you can use that for screen cover. And there are lovely cultivars out there. Screening, to me, if you want just kind of a solid look of one type of plant, that actually will give you a good screen cover, and you can shear that very nicely if you like a formal look. If you want an informal look, and to me, sometimes that's easier to maintain over time because then if something dies, it doesn't look like it lost a tooth. You know, I mean, it's just, it will allow you to put something else in there and actually keep the overall aesthetic. So you might want to pick four or five different types of plants and interplant them together. And that way, if something does go belly up, you can replace it and it's not going to be that noticeable.
That's more interesting to look at.
It is. And then if your blue spruce are really kind of leaving this world and you're trimming them up, you do want something that's going to grow and take that place after the trees are done. So in starting with some younger trees and they're going to stay underneath your cutoff branches on your spruce tree, then as those grow and the spruce dies, that can take over the area.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you, Lynn. Appreciate the call. Next up, we have Tony in Hixton. Hi, Tony.
Hello. I wondered if I can propagate some redbud from seed that my neighbor has redbud bushes, and I think I could collect some seed from them and still grow. Will the seed propagate easily?
They will. Depends on the redbud that they're coming from as to what you will get. But I say go for it. I'm pretty sure that they are going to be needing some sort of treatment on them. You don't see an awful lot of red buds poking up out of the ground. At the time when they bloom and the seed pods develop, they're going to fall. That's going to be summer. And I would have to double check to see if you need to do cold treatment on those. But my guess is no, that you should be able to just plant them. Whether you kind of scratch them up a little bit or not, I'd have to check on that too. That's, you know, not in the gray matter in the back of my head. But you should be fine with that. What you're going to get will depend on what the parentage is, because seeds are going to do whatever they're going to do. So they might pick up one trait from one side of the family, one trait from the other side of the family. So I say if you're willing to have some fun with it, go for it. Give them a whirl. They should do fun. You should get something from them.
Absolutely. What kind of, how would you suggest he do that? I mean,
number one, I would look to see what the requirements are. Mm-hmm. And that's just a quick look in a propagation book. You can go to the library if you don't have access online. You can go to the library and ask for a book on propagation, and it will tell you what you need to do.
Okay.
So you look up redbud, which is Circis. That's Cercis. And so you look that up and look up seed propagation on that, and it'll go boom, 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 tell you what you need to do. So if it needs cold treatment, it will tell you what temperature you need to treat it at, for how long, and then whether you need to scratch the surface of that seed a little bit when you go to water it and get it to go mm-hmm. after the cold treatment. Oftentimes, it's just pop the seed in the ground and see what happens. And if you're game, go ahead, go for it.
Yeah.
And then they will also tell you what type of material to put it into. Typically, you're going to want a seeding mix of some sort, and then you transfer that over into a little bit heavier soil as mm-hmm. it sort of develops. So,
okay, well,
yeah,
great.
Good luck with it.
Yeah, for
if
sure.
If anybody else has done Circis, give us a call.
Yeah, let us know. Thanks, Tony. Let's go to Becky in Rio. Hi, Becky.
Hi, glad to talk to you today. So I'm wondering a little bit more about the serviceberry. Does that also come in a tree form, or is it just a shrub that people have made into a tree by pruning out extra?
Well, you know, the jury's kind of out on that. There, the serviceberry, there are tree forms, and it's kind of a, I want to say an iffy line. Technically, anything that's over 12 feet is considered a tree. And so serviceberry can definitely get to be taller than 12 feet. So, you know, and then it goes to, well, is it multi-stem? Is it naturally single-stem? Well, there are trees that can be multi-stem. So, you know, it goes on and on and on with how picky do you want to be. And I'm sure there's going to be some plant nerd out there that I'm going to get an email from telling me exactly what I should have told you. But you definitely can find serviceberry trees. They have been pruned really to develop that way, and you know, cutting off the side branches as they sort of develop. There are cultivars that are more prone to being single stem, and there are cultivars that are prone to being more multi-stem.
Okay, thank you, Becky. Appreciate your call. Next up is John in Appleton. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Hello.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. A couple of years ago, well, 10 years ago, I planted some poplar trees because I really like them and I love the leaves and all that stuff. But I've discovered now that they're kind of like giant quack grass. And
yes, they are.
All over the place.
Yep.
I want to thin them out a little bit. If I cut them off at the ground and then, you know, spritz a little brush color on that stem is. How can I kind of keep them under control?
Yeah, you can do that. You can also cut them off. Just cut them off. What will happen is you may end up having to cut them off repeatedly because they're pretty tenacious. They will come back again and again and again. So if it's something that you really truly do want to control, you probably are going to have to do some brush killer on it. So that's cut the stem. And I am an advocate of taking a paintbrush, unless you're looking at 10 acres of spritzing. I would say if this is a relatively controlled space, then you just take your saw or your loppers or whatever tool is appropriate for the job. You take that out there, cut it off, and then with a paintbrush, paint the brush killer on the cut immediately. You cut it, and then you paint the brush killer on the top of that and then around the stem, you know, the trunk area about an inch to an inch and a half down so that it's almost like you're putting a cap of brush killer on that. That's going to cover that completely and totally, whereas spritzing it, you may not get as good a coverage. And if you're really after killing it, be serious about it and just brush that stuff on. And so that it's a slow process or it's a two-person process. One cuts, one comes behind. And I've also found a squeeze bottle works pretty good for that also, so that you can kind of dribble it on the top and then paint it around the outside edge.
Is there a better time of the year to be doing that?
Not with that one, no. Okay. No, especially if they're happy. I mean, there are places where I just can't get them, and people want them to grow, and I can't get them to take hold. And so they must really love that site. So I think it's going to be that one's going to be a battle. I hate to tell you, nature kind of wins sometimes.
Nature finds a way.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's worth a shot to control them. We have had pretty good luck with just cutting them off with a weed whacker if they're small enough.
Sure.
And you just keep at it.
Sure. Our guest today is Liz Fremont, provider of concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller. Stay with us. There's always more to come on the Ideas Network. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Glad to have you with us for a garden talk on the Ideas Network. Liz Fremont is back with us. We always enjoy having her here. She provides concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden Hoe. What plant questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Liz, let's go right back to the phones. Jeffrey in Green Bay has been waiting for a bit. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I was looking to create a street screen with native shrubs. It's a northern exposure that gets full sun with sandy soil. And I'm looking for a height of about 6 feet. And I'd be interested in any ideas that you'd have, and I'd like to take my answer offline so I can hear it.
You can still hear it, Jeffrey. You don't have to worry about that. It says Liz might have a question.
Yeah, I do have some questions for you. How long of a planting line are you looking at filling?
It's probably in the neighborhood of 50 feet.
Okay. And is there any particular thing that you like or don't like? Do you like fruit? Do you not like the mess of fruit? What are your preferences?
Yeah, the fruit would be good. I like the fact that the fruit brings in the birds and such.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a problem. I do have a deer problem, though.
Yeah, that really limits everything right there. Because they have just been voracious feeders, as we were talking about. But I have noticed that they don't particularly bother my serviceberry. They don't particularly bother the aronia. They don't particularly bother the elderberry. And all of those will do okay as long as they're established, as long as they had water to get started. So the sandy soil won't bother them tremendously. Do you have some nice particles of soil in there? Or is it all completely sand?
There's some decent areas. Yeah.
Okay. So we're not talking sand flats here. A sand dune?
No.
Okay.
No.
Bayberry also would do fairly well there. And again, you need to get it established with with some good watering habits to start with to get those roots really moving down. They will search for water. So as long as you can give them enough to keep them alive to let them go searching, they'll find the water down. They'll keep going down until they find it. So when you are watering, you water deeply, infrequently and deeply. Don't just, you know, walk by with the hose and give them a spritz. You need to do a little bit more than that. And what kind of height are you looking for?
I'd like around like 6 feet, right? Okay. Sort of right in there.
Okay, you're going to have to do probably some pruning on anything to keep it to about 6 feet on a lot of our native shrubs. The viburnums will do great. There's so many viburnums out there. You can do everything from the blue muffin, which will give you a beautiful blue fruit, to you know, ones that are just going to flower for you and look fantastic. And the early season flowering viburnums are going to give you some nice blooms and scent, and you know that's going to be great. And dogwoods will do fine in there, so you've got plenty of choices for it. And so it's really, you know, what style are you looking for? Is this informal? You know, you're going for native shrubs, so I'm assuming you want a little bit looser, less formal style?
Correct.
Okay. So any of those are really going to give you plenty of cultivars to choose from. And so I would start going, I mean, you're up in Green Bay, you've got the beautiful garden up there. They've got to have some natives for you to kind of walk around and take a look at. And, you know, if you're familiar with plants at all, that will at least get you started on what you can look through for cultivars. But if you do need ideas, go to the Botanic Garden, take a look, and then head to the garden center and, you know, see what they've got there. Because availability is a huge part of it, too. I can tell you all kinds of things that you'll never be able to find, and that's very unsatisfying. So do you have a great garden center that you like up there?
Yeah, I don't have one in particular, but we do have plenty.
Okay.
And I was wondering, would I be able to do sort of the same thing by mixing several different plants?
Absolutely.
You were talking.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so what you're going to want to look for is, as you're sorting through those cultivars to find what you like, look at the potential mature height and width so that you're mixing that up a bit. You don't want the same height and width on every single plant that you choose. So get something that's going to be a little shorter, get some tall stuff, get some medium. See if you can find something that's got a little bit more of an upright habit, and then go to something that's going to be fluffy and chunky like me. You know, just do really unusual and fun stuff with it. And that way, if something does have a problem, like we had talked about earlier, it's not going to be as noticeable, and you can fill it in with what you can find. Because if that one plant didn't work, I would not put that same plant back in there unless you're like me and want to see how many times you can kill it. So that will give you an opportunity to mix it up and put something else in that you might not have, and it won't look weird. It'll okay. just look like yeah. you added beauty.
And you did. Right. Thanks for that question, Jeffrey. So we didn't get a chance to talk to about flowering perennials.
Oh, we can do that quickly.
Let's do that quickly. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, hellebores, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right now is hellebore time, but I absolutely love them because they are a full four-season plant for us. And the leaves, they do look kind of ratty when spring comes along, but the new ones are poking up right away,
right.
and it's got a lot of structure to mm-hmm. it. So, you know, I know you go out and you look, they're expensive, they're worth it. Trust me, they're worth it. But the Brunera we had talked about earlier, that is fantastic. It's a great underused perennial plant. The Baptisias we talked about, definitely that is a good one. Vernonia is a lovely native that we don't use often enough. It's a fall bloomer, and there is a cultivar, a nativar out there that is Summer Swan Song, and it is short, which is fantastic because Vernonia, as it just grows and develops, a straight species can be 6 to 8 feet tall.
Oh.
And it's long stems with some kind of thready leaf type foliage. And then you get these beautiful purple heads in the late summer, early fall. Now they've taken that and shrunk her on down. And so you've got a great plant that's going to be 2 to 3 feet tall with this beautiful purple. And This cultivar, it looks like somebody just shaped it. It's got beautiful shape. And
wow.
So it's absolutely fantastic. That one is well worth taking a look at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't discount. I'm going to cheat and look because I want to get this absolutely right. I have them in my yard and I had to look at the cultivar. I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget. Clematis heraclifolia. It is a shrubby clematis and there is a China, and there's also a blue, and there is also, I think there's a China boy and New Love that are out. These are fantastic perennials. New Love, especially, I really, really like. It stands a little bit more upright. And so we're talking shrubby clematis. These don't climb.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get to be 2 to 3 feet tall. I love them. They say they don't grow in shade. They do grow in shade. And I don't see much for spot on them, and they're absolutely fantastic. So use those in the yard. They're going to have kind of grape leaf looking leaves. And then the flower stalks start poking up and the flowers develop. And as the stem goes up, you get more flowers.
Oh.
So there's always like this surprise coming. You know, you walk by in 2 days and you've got extra flowers popping
wow.
up. And typically with that plant, it's going to have a honey scent to it. So it's really, really lovely. And they're all in that sort of purple blue to purple kind of color.
Mm-hmm.
There's a red that is supposed to, a red leaf that is supposed to be shrubby, but it is not. It goes to about 8 feet. So just don't go with the red leaf. These are just plain green leaf. They're really, really lovely shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
And they tolerate an awful lot. Full sun to part shade. Mine have stayed put in part shade to full shade. So perfectly happy with that. The other one that we don't use often enough, and I think it's because people don't think it's a native forest and they think it's some weird exotic we're bringing in, are the big flowering hibiscus. And I'm talking dinner plate size hibiscus. These are natives for us. So take advantage of these really obnoxiously colored and and shaped natives. I mean,
yeah.
These things are dinner plate size, and you're looking at mosquitoes. So it's hibiscus mosquitoes.
Okay.
And there are big dinner plate size. And I have people say to me, well, they didn't come back. Yeah, let me go take a look at that, especially my dear friend. She says, I ripped that out. And I went, why did you rip that out? Well, it didn't come back. It was alive. They just don't start poking up until now.
Mm.
So now we're going to start to see their leaves or their stems poking up out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a late season developer. So
okay.
Oftentimes impatient gardeners will yank them out of the ground because they don't think they're alive. So give them some time. But it is one of the most impressive plants you can pop anywhere. If you've got a prairie that's got a damp spot in it, stick one of these in and it will be absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
Sedums are another one that finally people are starting to use.
Yeah.
But there are so many out there that are really, really gorgeous. So give them a shot as well. Love tough conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You can't kill those things.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
They're like hostas. You can tie them behind the car, drag them around, pop them in, and they still grow.
And they love that.
They do.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Oh.
And then, you know, one of my old standard favorites that's flowering right now is the bleeding heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's supposed to be a spring ephemeral, but if it's actually happy and the roots get plenty of moisture, the leaves will stay all season.
Yes.
And especially gold heart that has that chartreuse leaf color.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is. And mm-hmm. that is a really good pop of color in the shade any time during the year. So
mm-hmm.
give some of the old standards a try, too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's go to the phone. We've got Renee in Viroqua who has a question. Go ahead, Renee.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I have a very steep, very dry, very sunny hill that I want to kind of fill in. I have sedums. I did have some junipers there, but after 10 years, they went south and dug them up. And I just want something that I can add a little more color to that will survive that situation. And also, do I trim my clematises down to the ground in the fall?
The clematis really depends on what type it is. And what you need to do is, if you know which cultivar it is and which type of clematis it is, then you can easily look that up. Otherwise, you can go to, I'm sure there's a clematis society somewhere, but otherwise, if you look up clematis and types, it will tell you exactly when to prune the various types. So you might have to identify it by picture. And, you know, we have these wonderful phone machines now that you take a picture of it, put it on there, and you may be able to get an identification. Otherwise, take it to an extension office and see if somebody there might be an expert on whatever flowers you've got. There are so many different cultivars out there that it would be difficult with if you don't have a clue. So then my theory on that is if you don't know, cut it back at various times and see what happens, you know, and don't cut it all back and just cut parts of it and see what happens. And, you know, if that's the best you can do, you don't have any other information to go on, that's what you do. Or you let it go and just let it live happily ever after and cut off the dead stuff. I mean, surprisingly, things that look dead on a clematis will actually produce flowers. So, you know, it's, if you want to control the height, go ahead and control it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's gonna, that one's a toss up. Now, as far as what to plant on a sunny site that is going to actually hold soil in, that gets to be really interesting. Is she still online? Is she here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of a grade do you have on that? What's your slope? Is it really steep?
Very steep.
Very steep?
Yes.
Okay. And the junipers didn't fly on that. So I'm going to guess that it was very, very dry then. And because junipers, if it's super dry, they're not going to like that. And so let's see, you've got sedum. And what kind of a space are you working with? How much?
Quite a big, large area.
Ooh, okay. Have you considered?
Mostly the border.
Okay. And how? What are you talking about? Border on what? What are we bordering?
So like 3 feet wide and 40 feet long.
And what does it border? What is it up against?
Just up to the lawn.
Okay, so you're looking, is there a separation between the lawn and your planting area? Or is it?
Yes, I put in a rock border.
Okay, so you have something that will stop your planting. You've got a stop point on it. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. And it's very steep. Have you considered putting in a dry prairie mix on that site?
No, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, I would actually check out Prairie Nursery's website and see if they've got a good dry prairie mix that might give you what you need, because that, you know, you'd have to prep the site very, very well for it. To make sure that it takes hold, and you might have to actually put some fabric down or something like that to hold the seed in place while it takes. But that might be an option for a planting bed that size, because otherwise you're looking at a substantial amount of plants to get that covered. And I'm not so sure we're going to come up with things that are going to stay put on a steep slope of sand for long enough to get the roots to take hold. So seed
creeping blocks too.
And that kind of slid down the hill?
No, but they only grew to so far. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of hang there.
Yeah, and well, they are. And if the phlox works for you, then you can fill up the area, but you're talking 20 by 40 feet. That's a lot of phlox.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can go with ground covers that do work, you know, vincas and things like that, that are made to be thuggish and are made to really hold into the soil very well. You may have to put something down to hold them in place while they root, because it's the same thing. On a slope that steep and sandy soil, you get a good heavy rain and it'll wash a lot of the plants out. But take a look at the seed mixes to see if there is something there that makes you happy for your site, because that might be a good alternative for you.
Okay, thank you, Renee, for the question, and good luck with that. That's kind of a tricky area there.
It is. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't envy her having to fill that kind of an area. And, you know, it can be so disappointing and so unsatisfying with that many plants if they just are not going to take.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Let's go next to Sharon in Berlin. Hi, Sharon.
Whoops, just a minute.
Mercury is in retrograde. We understand, Sharon.
Can you hear me now?
We can. Go ahead.
Okay. A couple things. I'm out here, and there's drilling in the background. Somebody's fixing a trailer. Hibiscus.
Yes.
My sister-in-law had a very successful time with, half a dozen plants of hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
Zone 3, Barron County, on the south and the east side of the home. They came back every year. They were huge, huge, huge flowers. Beautiful. Why not blue rug juniper on that slope?
Her junipers died.
Well, they died.
Yeah, yeah. That's where the part of it comes in, because if junipers won't take there, then perennials are going to have a very tough time. Grolo sumac would actually work in that area, but if you're not looking for shrubs, then that leaves you with kind of an empty list. But yeah, the big flowering hibiscus are absolutely outstanding. They are lovely.
Yes, they are.
Yep.
Okay. Well,
yep.
Great.
Yep.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Sharon. Appreciate that. Next up, we have Louie in Oconto that has a question. Hi, Louie.
Hello. My question is this. Is there any plants that would really hold soil very well? I'm planting along the edge of a riverbank and need something to really hold the soil.
Are you looking at short, tall shrubs, trees? What are you looking at?
Whatever's going to hold the soil the best. I'm not going to be really mowing that area because it's too short of an area by a fence.
Okay. You can actually do a number of different things with that. And Oconto, is that what you said, Oconto Falls? Okay. Yeah, up in that area, I would say, you know, we had talked about elderberry a little while ago. Elderberry does very, very well there, and it holds in the soil beautifully. You can also go to, let's see, some good woodland plants. You know, we're talking about them, actually, the hibiscus. The big flowering hibiscus I've actually seen growing in standing water. So they are actually quite tolerant. They'll go everything from dry to wet. So you can give something like that a whirl. There are a number of good trees that will tolerate shoreline as long as it's not mucky. So there are trees that love to have that moisture, but no standing water. I mean, beech is one. Our American beech is one that does love to have moist soil, but no standing water. So depending on how much space you've got to work with, that may work, but it, again, no standing water. So you'd have to really take a close look at that. The Carpinus, that actually will do really well there. As will, we talked earlier about the hop hornbeam, that will do really pretty good there. There are some spruces that will tolerate moisture, but again, standing water, permanently standing water, not so much. So depending on, you know, you say shoreland, but shorelands are different depending on what you've got for soil structure. For short stuff, there are so many lovely, lovely plants that will really love good kind of moist soil. You're getting to the point now, or we are getting to the point now, where you might actually be able to grow buttonbush up that far. It's native a little bit further south, but it does grow in standing water also. So if you can find buttonwood, that would be a good one. New Jersey tea will actually tolerate a good amount of water as well. So, and carex. Carex will tolerate some water also. So that should give you at least a little to get started looking at.
Okay, good luck. Thank you so much, Liz, for being with us. Always so much information. We really appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, I love coming and talking to all the gardeners. It's wonderful. And you as well.
Well, thank you. We've been talking with Liz Fremont. She's a provider of concierge horticulture services through her business, The Garden & Hoe. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, we'll be live from Bayfield in Bloom. So we're looking forward to seeing people up there. If you're looking for a good book to read over the weekend, we do have our book club book coming up soon, end of June, and it's South of Luck by Wisconsin author Jim Gould. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well and enjoy your weekend.